HYY.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie delivered his State of the State address yesterday afternoon. He began by acknowledging the controversy that has become front page news, a four-day traffic jam in Fort Lee, New Jersey in September, orchestrated by high-level members of his staff and appointees at the Port Authority.
Now, the last week has certainly tested this administration. Mistakes were clearly made, and as a result, we let down the people we're entrusted to serve. I know our citizens deserve better, much better. Now, I'm the governor, and I'm ultimately responsible for all that happens on my watch, both good and bad. Now, without a doubt, we will cooperate with all appropriate inquiries to ensure that this breach of trust does not happen again.
Christie went on to say the state of the state is good and getting better because of bipartisan cooperation. He called for improving education, including increasing the length of the school day and school year, reducing crime, reducing property taxes, and reducing the cost for pension and debt services. Well, we have invited two guests who have joined us in this hour of Radio Times as we talk about New Jersey, its governor, and what happened in September in Fort Lee. Daryl Isherwood is senior political reporter for NJ.com. And Daryl, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me again.
Also with us is Carl Golden, senior contributing analyst with the William J. Hughes Center for Public Policy. That's at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey. He contributes regularly to New Jersey Spotlight and is former press secretary for Republican New Jersey Governors Thomas Kane and Christine Todd Whitman. And Carl Golden, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Daryl, let me begin with you. Was anyone paying attention to anything the governor said after that apology?
Yeah, you know, I think they were. I think actually that speech came, you know, you never want to have a controversy hanging over you when you're doing your State of the State, because it's supposed to be a time to tout your accomplishments. But from the standpoint of sort of breaking the news cycle, I think it really helped the governor because, you know, up until yesterday, all anybody was writing about and paying attention to was the Fort Lee Bridge scandal. Yesterday, we got a few other nuggets to take on, including, you know, his education proposal, some pension things. And so I think that, you know, today you've seen a much more diverse headline base around the state than you did yesterday. So I think particularly the pension issue and the education issue, a lot of people took a look at that and are wondering what's going to, you know, what sort of fights that's going to bring down the line and how it'll all play out.
Carl, do you think he turned a page on this scandal?
No, I don't think he did. I think he tried. I think he went in with a speech that was designed to change the discussion and change the debate and try to shift everyone's attention back to programs and policy. But this is a controversy, scandal, however one wants to describe it, that's going to go on for weeks, if not months, with two separate investigations in the legislature, with subpoenas, with testimony presumably under oath by top-level officials in the administration. The U.S. attorney is taking a look at it. Whether that will amount to anything, no one knows. But so I obviously credit him for trying to turn the page, but I don't think he had much choice but to try to turn the page.
Well, Daryl, let me go back to you because the governor says, without a doubt, we will cooperate with all appropriate inquiries to ensure this breach of trust does not happen again. And it seems the word that I circled was appropriate. Is that an important word to understand?
Yeah, I agree with you. I flagged that one, too. You know, my question will be, what will he deem an inappropriate investigation and how will we react? You've seen the Assembly is forming their own committee. Senate is forming their committee to take a look at this. And so, you know, at some point you've got now dueling committees doing the same investigation. Will they just say, hey, look, enough's enough. We're going to respond to this one and this one only. And then at some point, as Carl said, you might have the U.S. attorney enter into this. At which case I would assume that these legislative committees will be asked to back off. I flagged that too. I thought that was a kind of an appropriate it was a disclaimer on his part that, look, hey, let's not blow this thing out of the water. We're going to respond where appropriate, but I don't want 10 investigations of, you know, every one of my people being subpoenaed.
Carl, something else I circled, and this always just gives me the willies when I hear it. Mistakes were made, or in the case of Governor Christie, mistakes were clearly made. There's something about that passive voice that just rankles me. What do you think about that?
Well, his comments yesterday at the top of his speech pretty much echoed what he did in a two-hour press conference the week before. And to say mistakes were made is, sort of stating the obvious. And the question is not so much were mistakes made. Everyone understands mistakes were made. Everyone agrees mistakes were made. The question here is, A, who made the initial mistake? And, B, did he or she share that with people further up the chain of command and closer to the governor's office door? And we're obviously not going to know that until these subpoenas are responded to.
And this is really the question about Kelly, who was fired very publicly last week, Daryl.
Yeah, and others. Bill Stepien, I think, is obviously going to be asked what he knew about it. So I think Carl's right there. You've got a long way to go in this investigation. I think there are going to be a lot of people who will be asked to talk. Whether they will, I think, is another interesting question. Right. You saw David Wildstein take the fifth last week, and I don't think he had much of a choice given the fact that the U.S. attorney is sort of hovering around the edges. I wouldn't be surprised if you see other people subpoenaed take the same tack.
Daryl, I also noticed yesterday that Wildstein's lawyer basically said to the head of the committee, if, we will respond if you can give us some form of immunity. He seemed to be sending a very strong message there.
Yeah, I found that amazing. And it kind of went over a lot of people's heads. It happened in the closing minutes of that two-hour-long session in which, Wildstein didn't answer anything. So it wasn't exactly compelling during those 2 hours. At the very end, he threw out there, "Hey, I know a way that that we can talk," and you saw a kind of a smirk from John Wisniewski and the Wildstein's lawyer, a little bit of smirk on his face. I think they're gearing up. David Wildstein holds the key to this thing. I mean, he knows who knew what, when, and where. He knows who told him to do what. And I think he's looking to, and if you look through his documents, it says that too. I mean, his documents were a loaded gun, the documents he submitted as part of his subpoena. So I think you're looking at a guy who is willing to talk, but he wants the right deal in order to do it.
And, Carl, is the operative question, at least about Governor Christie, is what did he know and when did he know it? I mean, is that the cliched question hanging over this?
Well, to some extent, that's true. The mere fact that Wildstein's tongue could be loosened here with the promise of prosecutorial immunity really must have sent shivers through an awful lot of people in the State House, because it suggested pretty publicly and pretty broadly that I know everything that went on. Mm-hmm. I know who was a part of this. I know who was talked to. I know who gave it the approval. I know who put together the cover-up. That had to be a pretty frightening prospect for a lot of people. And I am, at this point, willing to give the governor the benefit of the doubt that he did not order this, he did not approve it, he had no advance knowledge of it, and until there is something to substantiate his being implicated in all of this to that degree, I will continue to give him the benefit of the doubt. Where the gray area comes in is what happened after the fact. And was he aware much, much earlier than he said in his news conference, when he only found out about Bridget Kelly's involvement the day before or something of that sort? That to me is much more potentially damaging than anything else.
Daryl, do you agree with that?
I do, and I think when the documents showed that, particularly Regina Agia, who was the authority's poobah in the office at that point, was told on, I believe it's September 13th, she was copied on that memo pulling the plug on this thing. I think that raises a lot of questions as to what happened next. I don't see a world where she just sits on that. A memo coming from the Port Authority executive director saying, you guys broke the law. I don't see a world where she sits. Now, who she kicked it to is the next question, and whether or not anybody did anything with it or whether it got lost in the barrage of email and paperwork. But, I think I also can, I'm willing to give the governor the benefit of the doubt. I mean, until something comes out that shows differently, you got to believe him. I mean, he can't. There's nothing out there with his name on it, with his fingerprints on it. Certainly a number of other people, Bridget Kelly being one, have their fingerprints on this. But, to this point, nothing with Governor Christie's fingerprints on it has emerged.
And I think, Carl, what I know I am, and I think a lot of people are struggling with, is just the very aggressive public persona that Governor Christie has, and it seems like a very hands-on kind of governor, and trying to reconcile that with members of his inner circle, largely, as we understand today, that knew things were really bad in Fort Lee, and obviously in the case of some of them, helped to orchestrate it.
Well, to Darrell's point about Regina Agia getting an email during the course of this saying, look, from you guys have broken the law here, one would think that Regina would have set a land speed record getting herself down to the governor's office to let them know that this email existed and she had it and here's what was going on. If she didn't do that, sort of a major failing on her part, but if she did do that, who did she actually go to see? Was it the chief counsel? Was it the chief of staff? All this goes to the question of Bridget Kelly, who was part of the inner circle, certainly, as a deputy chief of staff. The skepticism is very understandable, the skepticism that she could have concocted this scheme and pulled it off all on her own without anyone else's knowledge. That, you know, stretches credibility to an awful lot of people.
Well, Darrell, as you understand it, as someone who covers New Jersey, what kind of a boss has Chris Christie been?
You know, he's definitely hands-on. I mean, he's the kind of boss. The term micromanagement is used, and I'm not sure that that's necessarily a fair term, but he knows what's going on in his administration. I mean, he's absolutely not a hands-off governor. And he's a guy who gets down into the nitty-gritty of things. And I agree with Carl there. I mean, I can't... If Regina Agia did not kick up an email from the executive director of the Port Authority mm-hmm. saying two Christie appointees broke the law, that's a problem. If she did run it down to governor's office, that's a problem. If she kicked it to Kevin O'Dowd or Charlie McKenna, the chief of staff or chief counsel, you know, then those people are implicated earlier than anybody knows. So, you know, none of these scenarios are good there. And I just can't imagine someone in her position getting that. You know, we were kind of joking about it yesterday. If I get an email saying, that two guys who work with me just broke the law, first thing I'm doing is hitting forward, and that's going to my boss. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit on that and say, well, let's see how this plays out, you know. So it, to me, I agree. I think it's a tough sell to say she did nothing with that email, particularly how it was worded. I mean, if you read that thing, it was fiery, and it was designed to drop a bomb. So, you know, this wasn't a subtle hint on Pat Foy's part that something was wrong. I mean, he really went for the jugular.
And he was the boss up there, or is. And that's Darrell Isherwood, a senior political reporter for NJ.com. Also with us is Carl Golden. He's a senior contributing analyst with the William J. Hughes Center for Public Policy at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey. We are talking about Governor Christie, and we are talking about his State of the State address yesterday. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Dance Celebration supports WHYY and presents Les Ballets Jazz de Montreal in a performance of Philadelphia premieres, featuring works by Black Swan choreographer Benjamin Millepied and Israeli-American choreographer Barack Marshall. Les Ballets Jazz de Montreal is sophisticated, athletic, and technically stunning. January 16th through the 18th at the Annenberg Center. Tickets for Les Ballets Jazz de Montreal at 215-898-3900 or annenbergcenter.org.
This Week in This American Life, one of our producers, Ben, has this friend who told him that when he, the friend, goes to a store, like, to buy a pair of shoes, he'll say to the cashier, so is there a good guy discount? Like, you're a good guy, I'm a good guy. And he gets, like, 25% off. Ben is not the kind of person who would ever, ever try that until this week.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, back in the 60s, lesser-known soul artists didn't get much airtime in the U.S., but they became a sensation in England. Now they're getting new life on the airwaves.
I gave up everything. I loved our life. What things I possess.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie delivered his State of the State address yesterday, less than a week after he had to apologize for his staff's involvement in causing 4 days of traffic jams in Fort Lee. He reiterated that the New Jersey citizens deserve better and then focused on outlining his agenda for the year. We're talking with Daryl Isherwood and Carl Golden and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I do want to actually talk about some of the other things that he actually did talk about in his State of the State, and I have some more questions about Fort Lee and New Jersey politics as well. But let me get Anawim from Doylestown to join our conversation. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My comment is just that the reason why the phrase "mistakes were made" bothers me is that I think the whole point of this is that mistakes were not made; it was intentional. And so when he says that, it's not just highly inaccurate, it borders on a lie, and I think that's why it's so icky.
Well, that's an interesting comment. Carl, does that resonate with you?
Well, somewhat. I mean, his point in saying mistakes were made were to indicate that, you know, he was not the person who made them. And if he had said this was a deliberate act on somebody's part, then he opens up a whole new line of inquiry. Mm. So I think the use of the word mistake was enough for him to make the case that, yes, this is serious, I'm taking it seriously, without getting into my staff did this intentionally.
Let me raise something else with you, Daryl. The mayor of Jersey City, Stephen Fulop, declined to support Governor Christie for his reelection, and apparently very quickly after he said no, meetings with state officials were all very abruptly canceled. Is this a scandal or is this politics as usual in New Jersey?
I think to some extent that's politics as usual, although, you know, Christie plays a very hardball game of politics. There's no question about that. I was actually a little bit surprised at all of that, because when you look at the real insider politics behind this, Steve Fulop's a guy who wants to run for governor in 2017, and I don't think anybody disputes that. And I don't know how a gubernatorial candidate 4 years from now endorses the Republican in this election and gets away with it. And I think the Christie, you know, in my mind, the Christie folks had to understand that. I mean, how do you, you know, that's a tough thing to overcome for a would-be gubernatorial candidate. So I was shocked that they retaliated, if that's exactly what happened, in the wake of this thing. Now, to that point, Fulop was an important endorsement for them. I mean, Fulop's an up-and-coming Democrat, and to get him would have been a real accomplishment. But, you know, I chased that story for a while, whether or not they would actually get Fulop. And my understanding was they sort of knew it was a long shot, but they were hoping. And when it didn't happen, I didn't think anybody was that shocked. So to hear that they then retaliated to me was a little bit surprising.
Carl, it's so interesting. I mean, looking back over the months, weeks leading up to the election, it was pretty clear that Chris Christie was going to win pretty sizably in New Jersey. Why do you think he needed more? Why did you think he needed Democrats to support him?
Well, yeah, that's sort of what baffles a lot of people, that he was a candidate who was 60 to 62, 63% in the polls. He was being opposed by a Democrat who wasn't even supported by huge segments of her own party. Her fundraising was anemic at best. She had essentially no message. It isn't as if the issue was in doubt, and an endorsement by Fulop or even Mayor Sokolich in Fort Lee would have made one bit of difference. So you sort of left with the conclusion that a bunch of people sitting around, either in a campaign office or in the governor's office, deciding to, you know, throw their weight around and, you know, demonstrate to people that we have the power and we can retaliate, we can do this, you know, and get away with it. And not only get away with it, but send emails back and forth to one another, laughing about it and celebrating it. And whether that just comes from young, inexperienced people with no political background and, you know, being seduced by being that close to the seat of power, you know, I've been about to sit around and psychoanalyze these people, but there doesn't seem to be much else in the way of an explanation for it.
His polls today, though, I mean, he took a little hit, Daryl, but not a precipitous hit.
Yeah, that's, I think, the third or fourth poll we've seen out of this now. And none of them have shown that he's been hammered by this thing. So I think, you know, it looks to me like people, as we discussed, are giving him the benefit of the doubt. It's, you know, yes, people in his administration went rogue and did this, but, you know, the narrative I've heard from some people is he took control. He's showing his leadership ability. He came out and took responsibility for it. And so I think at this point what you're seeing is people willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. You also saw, interestingly, a Pew Research poll yesterday that showed this thing's not really resonating nationally. I think they showed 18% of people said they were following it closely, and 60% said it had no effect on their opinion of Governor Christie. So, yeah, I think at this point, you know, people are still, to the extent that they're following it, they're giving the governor the benefit of the doubt and waiting to see if another shoe falls.
Carl, you were a press secretary for two Republican New Jersey governors, Thomas Kane and Christine Todd Whitman. What is there a Republican view of Chris Christie these days?
Well, yeah, I mean, Tom Kane Sr., for example, said the other day that he was probably one of the best practicing type politicians he'd seen in a long time. I think he even compared him at one point to Bill Clinton. Of course, then he went on to say, you know, that perhaps the dark side of Governor Christie isn't what's desired by the American people in their president. So, but the view of him at this point is that he's exerted very strong leadership. Perhaps he's not going to get very many style points for diplomacy, but that's his nature. And so I think people are willing to say at this point that, yeah, the couple of staff people that ran off and did something remarkably stupid, and it reflected back on their boss. And the boss came out and said, you know, these people did something remarkably stupid, and I've taken steps to make sure that it won't happen again. But even those folks who have been publicly praising him for this, Mayor Giuliani in New York and various other people, are very quick to add the caveat that, you know, if something develops, if there's some revelation, either in the documents or in testimony or whatever, that implicates him, this is a whole different atmosphere now, that if he becomes in any way directly involved. If he does not, if that doesn't develop, I think that the Bridgegate wound will be painful, but it won't be mortal.
Well, Thomas, Governor Thomas Kane can't, though, appreciate how Governor Chris Christie dealt with his son, Kane's son, who's the minority leader in the Assembly.
In the Senate, yes.
In the Senate, yes.
I'm sure that stung, and the way it was handled, I wasn't obviously privy to what was going on in Governor Christie's office and why they decided to do what they did. It was, in my experience, a remarkably ill-advised thing to do, that for the executive, chief executive, to become involved in choosing leadership of the parties in the legislature, that just isn't done. It was a very ill-advised thing to do. And it became even worse when he lost. That drew more attention to it. And so that, I don't know why they did that. It just didn't make any sense to me at the time. It was Tom Kane Jr. who had pretty much carried the governor's program to the extent that he could for 4 years. Every gubernatorial veto was sustained. Everything the governor wanted pretty much in his budget was approved by the Republicans in a unanimous vote. So why he did it, the theories abound about he did it because Steve Sweeney, the Senate president, was upset with Tom Kane Jr., and Steve Sweeney and Governor Christie are very close. That seems to be something of an explanation, but it doesn't alter the fact that it was a very ill-advised thing to do.
Daryl, do Democrats in New Jersey then see Chris Christie as vulnerable? Do they, quote-unquote, fear him less?
Yeah, I think there is some of that, you know, a little bit of a, and it's probably a little bit overstated, but there was the phrase, the emperor has no clothes, being thrown around a lot that I heard, you know, in the last week or so. But, you know, the danger for the Democrats on this thing really is overplaying their hand. And you've seen that time and time again with this kind of thing where, you know, there is some there, but it's not, as Carl said, a mortal wound. But they will play this out, you know, well beyond, or have the danger of playing this out well beyond where it deserves to be. And then they end up looking like the partisan ones rather than, you know, showing some vulnerability on Christie's part. I think he does have some vulnerability at this point. I mean, he had to open his State of the State address with basically an apology and an acknowledgement of the scandal that's been going on. And no politician likes, mm-hmm. State of the State is your victory lap. And he had to open it with an apology for a scandal. So none of that is good. And all of that sort of lends itself to having some vulnerability.
Let me reintroduce the two of you, and I do want to get some more callers into the conversation. That's Daryl Isherwood, senior political reporter for NJ.com. Carl Golden is with us. He's at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey. Was a press secretary for two Republican governors in New Jersey, Thomas Kane and Christine Todd Whitman, and he's a regular contributor to NJ Spotlight. The lines have exploded. Surprise, surprise. Let me get back to our callers. Looks like we have Nate from Vineland, joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Nate. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm actually from Philadelphia, but I'm currently in Vineland for a meeting of the Cumberland County Long-Term Recovery Group. I'm an organizer with Occupy Sandy. We're a grassroots organization that's been doing work for the last 14 months in New Jersey. And I wanted to ask about the new investigation into the use of federal money, allegedly overspending on a politically motivated ad. So do your guests think that this will spark a broader conversation about what I and many others see as the administration's misplaced priorities with respect to Sandy aid and the total failures in some cases? Or, is it going to take Sandy survivors camping out there in Trenton with the national media?
Well, those are several very good questions, Nate. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. This is the Stronger Than the Storm ad. Daryl, I know there has been some questions raised about that ad. Where does it stand today?
Well, so you had this announcement the other day out of Frank Pallone, U.S. Rep. Frank Pallone's office, that there was a quote-unquote investigation by HUD of the money that was given for Sandy, basically a campaign, an ad campaign or a marketing campaign for Sandy recovery. And the issue is Governor Christie appeared in the commercials that were, touting the fact that the shore was back and that people could, spend their summers at the shore. And they're now looking into whether that was appropriate. If Senator Pallone is right, they're looking into whether that's appropriate that a governor who's in the middle of a campaign should appear in this ad. The thing I learned the other day, and I hadn't heard this before, but MWW, the company that did this ad, came out and said, hey, wait, we didn't put Governor Christie in here until after the contract was awarded. And that puts this in a new light as far as I'm concerned. They claim no mention of Governor Christie's appearance in this ad was made until they were already awarded the contract. So if that's true, I don't know what there is to investigate. I mean, the allegation was they were given the contract because they agreed to put Christie in, and they're saying, hey, no, that's not the case. So, right now this thing is very much in limbo. It's a second front the governor has to battle. But it remains to be seen whether there's any meat to it.
Well, and Carl, a year ago, obviously the governor was talking about Sandy and there was money coming in from the federal government. Now, a year later, some parts of New Jersey have been rebuilt, others have not. How big a political issue do you think this is for the governor?
Well, I think the governor tried to address some of it yesterday in his message when he said, I believe 80% of the money that was awarded has already gone out to people to either, rebuild or do whatever it is they had to do. So he did try to address some of that criticism. I don't think anyone expected the shore to be rebuilt in 6 months, no matter how much money was coming from the federal government. It's a very long process, and people are going to be very unhappy. Some people are going to be very unhappy. There's a huge amount of paperwork and red tape apparently involved in all of this. Whether or not the question of the governor appearing in the ads violated whatever federal regulations might have been asked about how the money was used, I think that'll come out. But I think, as Daryl says, this is just one more sort of headache that he doesn't need right now. And whether there's any substance to it, obviously we're not going to know for a while, but it's something that's always going to be out there because here's a governor who essentially made his national reputation by his response to this storm. He became a national figure, with his appearances on TV. It seemed like every half hour or whatever, but he really achieved national prominence through this, and now to have it all called into question, whether there's substance to it or not, have it all called into question, has got to be pretty disappointing for him.
If I can add one other thing, you know, one of the things that this does, too, is it contributes to this overall narrative, which may be the bigger question here. You know, as he has become more nationally prominent and, you know, the whispers about his presidential campaign, actually they're beyond whispers now, but, you know, the fact that he wanted to run for president, the narrative that Democrats were trying to establish is this sort of arrogant bully. And, you know, here's this guy who goes out and bullies and calls names and does things like that to anybody that gets in his way. And I think all of this, true or not, you know, whatever comes out of this, I think it all contributes to that narrative that's going to continue to build. If this thing, even if this blows over and he does end up running for president, he's got this narrative now sort of following behind him.
Let me get Gar from Cherry Hill to join us. Gar, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you very much, Marty. Listen, love your show. Try to catch it every day.
Good for you.
three short points. Last night, Chris Hayes on his show aired a photograph dated September 11th, which showed a group picture of Christie, Kelly, Weinstein, his campaign manager, plus two other people. Three people in the photograph are no longer in the employment of the state. So I'd like some reporters to start asking some questions. You know, what was said to who?
Well, let me take that one point and just get a quick response from Daryl. Do you know that photograph?
I think there was a photograph taken at, and I haven't seen it, but there was a photograph taken at the 9/11 ceremony, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought maybe David Sampson was in that picture as well, but I'm not sure exactly, you know, the narrative being pushed out there is, well, this was right in the middle of the thing, and here's all the players meeting together, but they're also all the players at the Port Authority involved in the September 11th memorial, so I'm not sure that that's necessarily any kind of smoking gun. I haven't seen the photo, so I could be wrong, but, you know, it is September 11th, and they were all there for the memorial.
Gar, we have a minute.
Agree. They were all there, but my question is just, what was said to who?
Mm-hmm.
The second point is, my own feeling is that the day after the first grant of immunity, Christie's going to resign. And my third quick point is, if he doesn't do that, then he'll be impeached through his use of the Sandy money once an audit is done either by the state or the Government Accounting Office.
Well, we don't know the answer to that, Gar, but you are speculating, and I know, Carl, we're almost up in a break here. I have seen the word impeachment thrown around. Is that too early to use the I word?
Yeah, I think that something Wisniewski got a little bit out over his skis there when you start talking about crimes being committed and possible impeachment. But the fact of the matter, the fact that those comments became an accepted part of the narrative, I think indicates just how deeply this thing has gone.
Mm. Well, that's Carl Golden joining us along with Daryl Isherwood, and we are talking, about Governor Chris Christie's State of the State address yesterday. He did talk about schools, which I want to talk about after this very short break with you, Daryl. And we want to get some more callers in at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. We'll be right back.
The Friends Schools of Bucks County are committed to challenging minds and nurturing spirits to prepare students for life. Providing independent education from preschool through 12th grade, the Friends Schools of Bucks County include United Friends, Newtown Friends, Buckingham Friends, and the George School. Guided by Quaker values, these schools provide a core curriculum while fostering exploration, self-discipline, creativity, and a desire to learn. United Friends, Newtown Friends, Buckingham Friends, and the George School support WHYY.
While the U.S. Congress is divided and gridlocked, some states have become political monopolies where one party controls both the state legislature and the governor's office, enabling that party to push through its political agenda. On the next Fresh Air, how funding from special interest groups is making this possible. We talk with Nicholas Confessori of the New York Times. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Want to seize the economic future? Go back to the 1800s, says one Nobel Prize-winning economist.
We are still the innovation nation, but we're only a pale shadow of what we once were.
Edmund Phelps on the economic power of collective tinkering to drive innovation and growth. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. We're getting a reaction to New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's State of the State address, which he delivered yesterday afternoon, and the controversy scandal involving his staff and appointees at the Port Authority involving a traffic jam that went on for about 4 days in Fort Lee, New Jersey. Talking with Daryl Isherwood, senior political reporter for NJ.com, and Carl Golden, who's with the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Daryl, I do want to talk about non-bridge-related news of yesterday. Chris Christie talked about lengthening the school day, lengthening the school year. I thought that was an interesting. I don't know if this is the first time he's talked about that, but it seems is this another way of taking on the teachers union?
You know, I think it. I'm not sure it's designed specifically to take on the teachers union, but my take on it is it shows even in the middle of all this other nonsense he's going through, he's not afraid of that fight. Obviously, the teachers union. That's one of those things that has always rankled public education unions, longer school days, longer school years. And so I think it showed, you know, despite all this, he's still willing to wade into that fight. I don't necessarily cover education, so I don't know if it's the first time. It's the first time I've heard it from him. I don't know that it's ever come up before. You know, I had a lot of people talking today about how expensive it's going to be and how to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those aren't things that come up generally in a State of the State speech. So it's not as if he omitted that, but that's going to be one of the main questions asked is, where do we get the money for the extra salaries and everything else it'll cost for a lengthened school day and school year? And you saw the teachers union come out last night and say, hey, we're willing to have that conversation, but I just somehow don't see that going that easy.
Carl, was there anything else of non-bridge related or non-Fort Lee related in the State of the State address yesterday that caught your attention?
Well, anyone who turned it off early probably missed, I think, was one of the most interesting and potentially most controversial points in the speech, which was, hey, guys, we may have to do some tinkering with the pension system if we're going to afford all of these other things that I talked about, not the least of which is the school, the lengthening of the school day and whatever. That really touched a raw nerve with Senate President Sweeney, with Assembly Speaker Prieto, and others, that this governor would, 2 years after he touted his Great Pension Reform Act, to stand up and say that didn't go far enough and we have to do more tinkering with it. That has the potential to really dominate this legislative session. If he follows through on that in his budget message next month, I guess, with more specifics about how he intends to do it, whether he intends to either reduce the state's commitment or whether he intends to skip a pension payment, which is not certainly unknown in this state, but it's also contributed to the problem that we have with it. That to me was one of the major points in the speech that's going to kick off a real political brawl.
You see it that way, Daryl?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody flagged that immediately, and you saw Democrats come out in their response and immediately say, no way, no how. You know, we negotiated that thing in good faith, and we're not going to touch that. It was sort of, I mean, as Carl said, if you turn it off early, it came toward the end of the speech, and it was sort of a bomb if you were paying attention. You know, all of a sudden I was looking at the transcript and I thought, wait a minute, you know, is he actually saying we might not be able to pay that $1 billion? I mean, that was one of the tenets of that pension reform, is that we would escalate the payment every year for the next, whatever it is, 7 years to get us back on track. And so Democrats immediately flagged that and came out swinging in their response.
And I'm curious about his relationship, Christie's relationship with Senate President Steve Sweeney. How do you see it, Daryl?
You know, they've got a good relationship. They've worked well together. You know, one of Christie's major tenets in his campaign and afterwards has been bipartisanship. And a lot of that has to do with Steve Sweeney. I mean, they've gotten a lot of things done together. Some people would say and have said Sweeney's a little too close to the governor and too willing to jump into deal making with the governor. But, you know, they have a good relationship, and they've certainly worked together and gotten a lot of things done. There's a new dynamic now in Trenton as Vinny Prieto takes over the assembly speakership, which should make things a little more interesting. I think he's going to be a little bit more vocal presence than Sheila Oliver was when she was speaker for the last couple of years.
What do you anticipate, Carl?
The Sweeney Christie alliance, or you know, however one wants to characterize
romance,
it.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of like it's a shotgun wedding or whatever. But here you've got a governor who is, you know, widely presumed to be interested in seeking the presidential nomination in 2016, and a Senate president who is just as widely presumed to be charting a path to run for governor in 2017. And as a result, they kind of sort of need each other to build a record over this coming legislative session. And it's going to be interesting to see whether or not Sweeney will, you know, bend toward the governor will bend toward Sweeney, and see whether or not their association is going to stand this test, not just the test of the controversy over the bridge, but which it was sort of surprising that Sweeney said, we're going to have our own investigation in the Senate. I was sort of surprised at that. I thought he would have preferred to stay sort of somewhat on the sidelines and let John Wisniewski carry the ball here. But and the pension thing on top of it, Sweeney put himself on the line to help the governor get that pension reform thing through 2 years ago at great risk, at good, substantial risk to Sweeney. So is he going to go along with this, or is this going to drive the wedge between them and all the, you know, future political ambitions dynamic on top of it is going to make this some very interesting days.
Well, it looks like everyone that's calling into the show or emailing just wants to talk about the traffic jam in Fort Lee, New Jersey. So let's get back to them. We have, looks like we have John from Hamilton, New Jersey. John, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead, John.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm John, and I'm a traffic engineer.
Okay.
And when you do traffic studies, you count traffic while it's moving. You don't stop traffic. The only time you stop traffic is maybe to set up equipment to count traffic, which is briefly. So I just can't buy the four-day stoppage of traffic for a traffic study.
Well, John,
so, and
let me take your point, which I still think there's some really basic questions that are hovering over this whole issue, Daryl, which is, first of all, was there a traffic study? Why was there a traffic study? What about the governor, the mayor of Fort Lee, the kind of role that what he knew or didn't know?
Yeah, I think the biggest question still out there is why did this happen? You know,
yeah.
in his apology the other day in the press conference he gave, the governor still held out there, you know, the statement, I don't know if there was a traffic study or not. I didn't think anybody believed that anymore, you know, based on those emails. You don't see an email saying time for some traffic problems, you know, a month before a legitimate traffic study. But you know, I think to the caller's point, I mean, that's what the Port Authority guys were saying. This is unprecedented in the way we would conduct something like this. This isn't something that takes a month of planning. This is a year of planning that goes into these things usually. And so, you know, the biggest question out there, and the governor has not offered any answers, is why? Why did this happen if it wasn't a traffic study? And, you know, the governor has said his people have never sought Mark Sokolich's endorsement, which was later sort of refuted yesterday, but take him at his word. So it doesn't make sense to him. So if that's the case, there's got to be some other explanation for it that nobody has yet offered. Everybody's offering theories, and there's a few of them kicking around, one about a big development in Fort Lee. And, but nobody has yet said why. You know, why did this happen?
Carl, do you have the answer to that question?
Well, yeah, I think the traffic study story has been pretty thoroughly discredited. I venture to say that the number of people who actually believe that there was a traffic study going on has now dwindled down to the two guys at the end of the bar in the corner tavern. It was not credible from the outset, and it's even less credible now. So, but as Darrell points out, you know, what is the reason? Was it to, you know, inflict some kind of punishment on the mayor of Fort Lee, or was it all of these other, these other speculative things out there, the reason for it? I sort of lean toward the idea that it was some sort of effort to tell the mayor, okay, if you won't, you know, endorse our guy, would endorse Governor Christie, and if you won't play along with us, if you won't go along with us, you know, an endorsement's not going to cost you anything in Fort Lee. We'll show you who's boss here, and we'll do this. And I really think that was as simple as that.
But what's interesting, and this is getting a bit into the weeds, but I think it was the New York Times or one of the articles doing one of these some more comprehensive looks at this traffic jam, which was that the mayor of Fort Lee said, yeah, they asked for my endorsement. I didn't say yes. I didn't say no. And it, I mean, it seemed very vague as compared to the mayor of Jersey City that who said no.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, the mayor of Fort Lee, he might be a wonderful man and a great mayor, but when you get right down to it, what could he have possibly brought to the table in terms of the governor's reelection?
Yeah, there's something like 30,000 residents in Fort Lee, and to the extent that an endorsement sways any of them, it's certainly not going to contribute anything. I mean, you know, a couple of extra votes here and there certainly wasn't going to make the difference in this election.
Let me get Mike from Lehigh to join us. Excuse me, Lehigh Valley to join us. Mike, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I believe that the bar has been set so incredibly low for what is a scandal these days. And I think that this is a combination of Christie's national profile and his blustering style, which has offended people who oppose him politically, has served to elevate this to a level of importance that it previously would never have attained. And I think that overall, the people, and even within the context of this conversation today, the two gentlemen you have on have offered so many caveats and so many kind of qualifiers. Oh, well, maybe if this is the case, and if that's the case, and we don't know. Even if Christie did, which I think probably most likely, probably did it as an act of political retribution, you know, like the gentleman just said, you know, kind of flexing his muscle. Even if he did do that, which is certainly suboptimal and is not something that you want from any elected official, that is such a low. The idea that 4 days of traffic jams in Fort Lee has risen to this level of prominence. Has anybody ever driven in Fort Lee? I mean, it's filled with traffic jams normally. So I believe that the manufacture, I believe it's mostly manufactured outrage akin to the Benghazi pseudo-scandal or Jeremiah Wright pseudo-scandal. Just like that. Like, you don't want the president to be associating with somebody like Jeremiah Wright.
Well, okay. Mike, let me take your essential point. I mean, from my perspective, and of course there's much we don't know, which are why we're speaking in using caveats as this story unfolds. But if we're talking about a traffic jam where people were put at risk, and I think that's absolutely clear at this point, it is an abuse of power, and we don't know where that power came from. But, Daryl, do you see this as being overblown?
No, I think you're right there. The essential point here, I don't think, is the 4 days of traffic. I mean, he's right. It doesn't run. Nobody died. Yeah, there were people put at risk. Ambulance times took longer than they should have, and, you know, things like that. And there were people put, no question, people put at risk. But I think the issue here is, as you said, the abuse of power. And I think people are looking at this and saying, is this rampant in the Christie administration? Is this the kind of administration he has fostered, the kind of atmosphere he's fostered? And the caller is absolutely right. I mean, this takes on more importance because of Christie's national profile. But that's just natural. I mean, you get that target on your back as a potential presidential candidate, and you know, everything you do is going to be looked at through that prism and looked at a little more closely through a microscope, if you will. And I think that, you know, if this comes out that Christie actually was involved in this, I don't see how you can call that a manufactured scandal. I mean, here's the governor using state and federal assets to punish somebody politically. I just don't see that as a minor issue. Yes, nobody died, but I don't know that somebody necessarily has to die for a scandal to be a scandal. And again, you know, boy, add a caveat. I'm not saying the governor did know it. I'm not saying there is a line to his office. But I don't think the 4 days of traffic are necessarily the issue here.
What do you, Carl, do you want to respond to Mike's comments?
Yeah, I disagree that it's a manufactured crisis, and your point is right on the mark. that people do not expect, anticipate, nor think it's a good idea for a governor or a president or anyone in public or high public office to take the power that they have, the enormous power at their hands, and wield it like a spiked club against enemies. People just react very badly to that, and that's what's led to this. It isn't. Anyone who's ever driven in Fort Lee has been caught in traffic.
Yes, they have.
That isn't the point. You know, the point is that a governor potentially, and I don't like to keep using caveats, but in this case we have to because we don't know what really happened. If the governor was involved, people respond and react to that very badly because they see it as using the power that they've been given by popular vote to exact political revenge on someone, and that is not something that's particularly desirable.
Carl, we're almost out of time here, but I know that Governor Christie is head of the New Jersey, the Governors Association of all the
RGA,
yes, and I believe he's going to Florida to do some fundraising down there. Has he been tarnished, or is it too late to know among Republican governors?
Oh, I think he's probably got some mud on the cuffs of his trousers, but we'll see how far it goes from there. I think that when he goes to raise money, he's going to be very successful at it. And when, you know, he's great in a rally, fundraising, political setting. And I don't think there's going to be anybody running around the convention hall in Florida with a sign that says, "What about Fort Lee?"
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Carl Golden, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Marty. Appreciate it.
And he's a senior contributing analyst with the William J. Hughes Center for Public Policy. That's at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey, and was press secretary for two Republican governors in New Jersey, Thomas Kane and Christine Todd Whitman. Daryl Isherwood, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
And he's senior political reporter for NJ.com. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to carry on this conversation. Also, you can check us out on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.